Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 145 of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Kevin Optimus Solo. Joining me today is Hard Candy Mandy.
Hey, hey.
Movie Rebel Dan.
How's it going?
Not too bad. And Fridley Scent, hello.
Hi.
We are back at it, back at the top 100 list. We'll get to that in a second. But obviously, we would like to get you guys to tune into some of our other episodes as well. So obviously, stay up to date with our video game series that's going on. I'm doing it at the beginning of the episode instead of at the end because nobody's listening by the end because they've heard our picks and they're like, They're like, no, we can't listen to this anymore. So I gotta clip stuff out right away.
I just don't.
Now we're gonna drive them away. Drive them away immediately.
I don't like the groove here.
Also, we're just concluding our Miyazaki spotlight, and the reason I bring that up, and the reason this is important to talk about, because people will only have so much more opportunity to vote to help us shape our next director retrospective. So we just recently released episode 144, which was our Wind Rises episode, which was the last film we were reviewing in the Miyazaki spotlight, which means the next time we go back there will be our wrap-up in which we will announce the winner of the director retrospective vote to see who we're going to be talking about next. If you guys missed episode 144, please go back and listen to that one. But we had four choices for directors that you guys could vote on for our next one. Amanda, what was the director that you had selected?
Guillermo del Toro.
Matt, who did you put up for the vote?
I think Kevin Smith.
Yes, that's correct. Dan, who did you put up?
Robert Zemeckis.
Zemeckis, and I put up Alfred Hitchcock. So those are the four directors that you can be voting on as we speak. And as soon as we record our wrap-up for the Miyazaki Spotlight, that poll will be closed, and we'll have to announce who the winner is. Right now, there's been five votes so far, so fairly early on. By the time this goes live, it'll be way more than that. But so it's anybody's race right now. So everybody can go on to Twitter, Facebook, and try to rally the troops for your director if you wish. We'll have to wait and see who comes out on top of that. But let's get down to the business at hand. We started this a long time ago, episode 100. We kicked off our top 100 personal favorite films of all time. So I just would like to highlight that. This is not necessarily what we're saying are, you know, the critically acclaimed best films ever made. You know, from a technical standpoint, these are our personal favorite lists, and we're getting closer and closer to the top 10. Today's episode, we're going to go through our numbers 20 through 11. And before we get to the actual picks, just want to remind everybody we did place a wager when we got to number 30. And the wager was, how many films would we have from our top 30 to our number one picks that appeared on all four of our lists? Amanda's guess was 2. Matt, you said either 3 or 4. Dan, you were at 5, and for some reason I said 6. I played the game the wrong direction. I should have gone the lowest instead of the highest, I think, because so far, I don't believe in numbers 30 through 21, we didn't have a single pick that crossed over on anybody's list, not to mention all four. I don't think we had anybody that was on even on two people's list so far. So maybe today we'll change things. We'll have to wait and see if we line up at all or if we're just all completely different in our personal favorite films of all time. Amanda, anything that you'd like to say to preface your section today, numbers 20 through 11?
I think that there's going to be a really good showcase of some of my faves when it comes to some of my guilty pleasures, I guess, when it comes to film.
Isn't that what your whole list has been so far?
But this is more concentrated towards the top here.
Okay. Dan, what about you? What are we going to look forward to for 20 through 11 for you?
It's interesting. Like, I think there's a wide range of films, some returning actors that we talked about, some major franchises, and, I think if you have been all following my list, which if you are probably a crazy person, you notice a lot of patterns that will pretty much just continue with this selection.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say and what picks you're going to pick. Matt, what about you? What are we looking forward to in this chunk of 10?
Oh, man. My 11 through 20, like, It spans like the whole of my life from some of the earliest movies that really like shaped and developed my personality all the way up to something that came out like 2 years ago, 1 year ago. But funny enough, in my top 20, I see at least one film from both of the directors we've done a spotlight on, as well as my pick for the list.
Oh, nice. Excellent. I'm looking forward to seeing which ones those will be. For my section of 10, this is actually an interesting segment for me. I am going to have films that represent five different decades in this set of 10, but it's the first and only chunk of 10 films for me that has zero films from the year 2000 forward. So I have nothing from the last 17 years in this chunk of 10, but I do represent five other decades. So, I just looked at it and I have something from 2000 and beyond in every other section of 10, so I don't know how that worked out. But and I also have a director that's going to show up three times in this episode. I didn't realize that was a thing, but as I'm looking at it, I do have a director that's going to be have three of his films show up right now. So I have to wait and see which director that is going to be. But let's get right down to business. Matt, you usually kick things off, so what do you have at number 20?
All right, so if anyone remembers back to the last episode, I said there was a chunk of five movies that were bad, tagged as bad movie night movies, and I only did four of them the last episode, so I'm gonna end it up here with number five, which is Duel to the Death. I don't like Duel to the Death's not a very popular, not a well-known movie, I don't think, because I can't name a single actor from it. It's like a just an old kung fu movie about how Japan and China. Every year, every 5 years, they both send one warrior to this like neutral ground, and they duel to the death. And the winner means something. I don't even remember. But honestly, like the duel to the death at the end, like because it ends on that climactic note of here's the final duel, is like not important. Everything that's important leads up to it. Like there's just like hours of ninja shenanigans. Like at one point, there's a giant ninja 20 feet tall, and he's like fighting some monks, and then like he backflips and he's six ninjas. Like ninjas will tear their clothes off and be naked ladies, and like everyone will be like, oh no, I can't look at that naked lady because I'm like a Shaolin monk, and that's against our thing. Like it's like they just do shenanigans all the time, and it's so great and it's so much fun. It's one of the most fun movies to watch, and I can't recommend it enough. I don't even know if you can find it. My mom got it at a garage sale for like a buck.
I've seen this with you, correct?
I believe so. I show it to almost everyone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember that premise and the shenanigans that lead up to that. So yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch, especially with a group of people, like we've said, with a lot of the quote unquote bad movies. So like it's something I've actually seen out of your bad movie list. Amanda, what are you starting today with? What year are we going to start with?
This movie is as old as me. This movie from 1987.
Not a 90s pick.
No,
What do you
not
got?
yet, anyways. Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey, Dirty Dancing.
So you followed up with, in case people forgot what your number 21 pick was, that was Footloose. You're
Yes.
going from Footloose to Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing is only slightly above Footloose.
Why?
I like the love story a little bit more here. I l like the idea of being on vacation with your family, meeting the guy of your dreams at some fancy resort, and he ends up being your dance instructor. It's amazing. And they have this final dance scene that's a culmination of everybody's dreams. Every girl wants to be lifted above Patrick Swayze's head.
I will head to the gym after this recording. I did not see Footloose, have not seen Dirty Dancing.
Oh, good Lord. It's so iconic. And the dancing, the characters, the relationships, the songs, so great.
Matt or Dan, have either of you seen Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, it's one of my wife's favorite movies, so I watched it. And we actually recently watched pieces of the like live TV version, which was one of the worst. Like, you want to watch something that's awful, that is, there you go.
Nice. Oh, Amanda.
I've even seen the like Dirty Dancing sequel, Havana Nights or whatever. Patrick Swayze's in it for like 5 minutes. Not great.
Not great. All right. For my number 20 pick, I am going to start in the decade of the 90s. I guess I'll share this with you a little bit, Matt, because you said you had somebody from one of our director retrospectives, and I have one here as we start off from Tarantino, library, and I'm going to go with Pulp Fiction as my number 20 film. I don't think there's much that needs to be said about Pulp Fiction. I think it's pretty understood why it's a good film, and I already ranked it amongst Tarantino's films when we wrapped up that retrospective, so I won't go into too much detail, but yeah, it's one of his best films, and it's enough for me to be all the way up at number 20. Amanda, any comments?
Yeah, I love Pulp Fiction. Super disturbed by this movie, so I can't watch it a ton. But it's crazy, powerful, balls to the wall, batshit crazy banana sandwich ride.
I don't even know what you just said, but I'll agree.
It's nuts.
All right. Dan, what do you got to start off today?
Well, I'm going to start off with I talked about it in one of some previous picks that Paul Newman's probably my all-time favorite actor, and I'm starting with one of his films. And he and Robert Redford had a legendary pairing, had a lot of great movies, The Sting. But for number 20, it's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid for me. And this was like the first Western I think I ever really got into. A lot of the Westerns I always felt they were really slow and meandering, but like Butch Cassidy still I think really holds the test of time, and I think it's pacing a little bit more modern. It's different from like the John Ford type of style. And Paul Newman and Robert Redford are just fantastic. It's a great entertaining film. So it's kind of broke the Western barrier for me that got me into other films that I'll actually talk about. And again, just being a Paul Newman fan, and he'll also come up later in today's podcast.
I've got a very serious question for you, Dan.
Okay.
Don't laugh. Is Paul Newman the guy on the salad dressing?
He is. He is. Yeah.
Okay,
He has
so.
got. He's got like his own. There's a lot of other businesses he does too. So.
That's where we were going today, talking about salad dressing
Newman's own
labels.
salad dressing.
Here's a statement I didn't think I would make. Out of all of you guys' number 20, the only one I've seen is Duel to the Death on Matt's list. So,
Heyo.
love it. I need to see Butch Cassidy because I am a big Western fan. I've always been. My mom was big time into Westerns as a kid, and but it's just I don't know. I must have just seen the select ones that she was a big fan of, and I don't know if this just never came up or what. But I need to definitely check this one out. Matt, back to you for number 19.
Number 19, a way more recent movie. And this might show the age of my list because, like, we started this almost a year ago now, and some of these might have been in the moment picks. But my number 19 is Guardians of the Galaxy. I will defend it at least as much to say it's like Star Wars with superpowers, and Star Wars is my favorite thing ever. So, like, I enjoyed this movie a whole lot. Honestly, it might even deserve to be higher on my list. I'm sure it's come up in someone else's list, and I don't really, like, it's great.
Amanda, thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, super love it. Love the Trash Panda. Love Groot. I think that the first installment of Guardians of the Galaxy set, like, a new tone, and it kind of opened our eyes to, like, a new way to do these comic book movies almost, because it was definitely its own, it had its own identity, and I think that definitely followed through with the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that we just got.
I obviously made my feelings known about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and how much I laughed at that film. So I don't need to speak too much about how I like that franchise. I like sci-fi, so anytime that any of these other series or franchises are going to have a sci-fi element to it, I'm usually on board. So I thought it was a lot of fun, way out of left field. Nobody expected that to be the hit that it was, I don't think. So I think it turned a lot of people's heads, to say the least. Dan, what do you think about Guardians of the Galaxy? And Matt obviously had Iron Man and Captain America back in the last episode, so Guardians of the Galaxy about 10 spots higher. Do you agree with that ordering as well?
No, I think you should like the other ones better. No, I mean,
Yeah.
like I probably wouldn't order them that way, but also like I get, Guardians is a hell of a lot of fun, and I definitely one of those films that showed that like Marvel can really make anything successful. I mean, a talking tree, a raccoon, and obviously, like the success of that movie was crazy. But I think too, like they allowed James Gunn to kind of put his own little spin on it, I think, which really made it work. So
absolutely, Amanda, you were in the 80s for a second. Are we going right back to the 90s?
Yes. 1992. Not a lot to say about this because I'm pretty sure you guys, I don't know about Matt, but you guys, as in Kevin and Dan, also love this movie, and that's Disney's Aladdin. Love the freaking songs. Love all the characters. Robin Williams just really at his animated best. His best because he was, like, animated in real life, and this gave him a chance to actually be super awesome and animated. So great voice work across the board. Songs, of course, were amazing, and the animation was great and super crisp, and I love, like, the look of, even, like, the metal and stuff, like, very defined, like, silvery stars, you could tell the grit in the sand, I loved all the detail that was in this, and it's just a wonderful film, guys.
Yeah, I still don't know why Aladdin's not in my top 100. I don't know why I did that, because it's easily one of my favorite animated films, and I guess brain fart on that one, because it should definitely be on here. But that is the first film that has been on at least two lists that we've talked about, so.
But not where we need it to be, correct?
No, I mean, it was Dan's number 21 and your number 19, so I'm talking about the first one that's appeared in two people's top 30 that we've had, so.
Oh, but we would have needed it to be on two more lists?
Right, mine and Matt's, but I love Aladdin. I love that was one of it's probably my favorite personal Disney film of all time. I put Lion King on my list, but they should really both be on my list, so I guess if this is the one person that doesn't have it on my list, I will kick myself, so. Matt, have
but you... You officially are, because it was in my 70s.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So you all had it in your top 100, but we weren't going to get it as far as a common pick for our top 30. But a lot of universal love for Aladdin. I'm not going to say anything bad about it, that's for sure.
I didn't know you had seen this one, Matt.
Yeah, I've seen Aladdin. It's weird because I feel like I should be like, yeah, I've seen a lot of these, but I've only seen like half of them. But, like, it's a good guess as to which one I have and haven't, I guess.
I'm just going to assume always that you haven't. So it's, like, a surprise when you do.
So with your pick of Aladdin, like I said, that was the first time that we've had a crossover in the top 30. I am going to do the same thing with my next pick, though, because this one already appeared in Amanda's top 30. I'm going to stay in the 90s. I was at 1994 for my number 20 pick. I'm only going to go 1 year before that, 1993, for my number 19 pick. Going from Tarantino to Spielberg, I'm going Jurassic Park for my number 19 pick. I mean, come on, it's the best dinosaur movie of all time.
Ever.
not that there's a billion of those, but man, just thinking back to being in a theater for Jurassic Park and seeing something that we had never seen before on the big screen, and what they pulled off with the just majestic visual effects that they've pulled off with the dinosaurs. There's so many moments that are iconic in that film. From beginning to end, there's just moments that you absolutely remember the first time that you saw that. Made a generation of people fall in love with dinosaurs, and for some of us kids that kind of grew up liking dinosaurs, but all we got was like Land Before Time, like this was like the legit, like, I don't know, rejuvenation of that, like, nostalgic love for something we enjoyed as a kid. So I think Jurassic Park's amazing. I think it was a definition of how to do a blockbuster right, and we haven't got a lot that's been that awe-inspiring, I don't think, since. So Jurassic Park is my number 19. Amanda, you agree, because it was already on your list.
Yep.
All right, Dan, what do you have in 19?
19, I'm also going to another favorite actor, and I think one of those movies, if I were just to rank one of the films I've watched the most, it probably would be a lot higher, because it was just always on TV, but it's Groundhog Day, starring, of course, Bill Murray. One of my all-time favorite comedies. I think what was interesting is, like, I feel like I've watched this movie, like, 80 times, but really only saw the ending, like, two or three. Never really would watch it fully through. But it's Bill Murray being great, and there's just that combination of him and Harold Ramis, even though this kind of led to them being a split. They just really, I think, were able to complement each other style-wise. And also, I think, really has it's pretty poignant by the end. were insanely great concept that has been, you know, replicated in other places with near as good success. But there's just something special, I think, about Groundhog Day, and it's, I think, you know, arguably Bill Murray's best movie. A lot of people could probably go other directions, but for me, it's always been my favorite.
I do agree with you. I think I've seen the film way more times than I've seen the actual ending. Like, I've seen bits and pieces or segments or like the first half or the, you know, first two thirds, and I have not seen the end of that film as many times as I should have. But I love Bill Murray. It's easily one of his best, like you said. So I have no problems with Groundhog Day. I think it's great. Amanda, have you seen Groundhog Day entirely?
Yes, but I couldn't tell you what happens in the end either.
All right.
But I've driven to Woodstock a lot where they filmed it. And I'm always like, where was it that they filmed this? But I'm only ever on like one road in Woodstock, so I don't think I was where that was happening.
So we need to add this one to the queue. Matt, what do you think about Groundhog Day?
Oh, I mean, I saw it years and years and years ago, but I couldn't remember it at all.
All right. Sounds like a group watch that's going to have to happen. Matt, what are you going with number 18?
All right, Dan, if you don't think Guardians should be above Iron Man and Cap, what about right above Guardians, I put the Avengers. Is that all right?
That's suitable. I get it. Because it's like you're leaning up to it, right? You're putting the team together and then...
Yeah, it's. I think it's the best one of those movies. Like it was something unlike anything we'd ever seen, right? Where there were four or five movies that all led into one movie, and it was huge and spectacular and amazing and really well done and a lot better than the second one. And like, I don't know, man. The Avengers is something that I don't think we'll ever have. Like, I don't know if we'll ever experience the magic of that concept ever again. Like, I mean, I know DC can't do nothing.
What are you talking about? Right? Justice League's about to come out here, isn't it?
Oh, it looks amazing. Oh. It looks so good. It looks all fake and shit like Avengers.
it doesn't look like a dime store cyborg costume made out of mostly latex and what the F.
But Aquaman, though.
Look, Aquaman doing a weird fly missile explosion thing. That's cool, too.
That looked great.
Oh, man. I'm gonna see this movie if time permits, but I'm not... You can't make me like it.
We're gonna have a showdown between you two when this movie comes out.
Bring it.
Amanda? Go ahead. Go ahead, Matt.
I was gonna say, it's gonna be the fight that, like, never really happened for, like any of the previous one, right? I feel like we never really got down to it with the other two, especially not Suicide Squad. Like, F that movie.
I wasn't after that.
She had nothing to defend.
No, I wasn't even gonna try really with that.
Now she's thinking there's hope because of Wonder Woman, I think. But
no, because of Justice League and Aquaman. That's what.
She's just on the Aquaman train there. Sub, I guess.
I think the Flash's stuff looks pretty funny.
I'm still upset that it's not the Flash from TV, but anyway.
Yeah.
Amanda?
What?
We're going to turn this into a whole like comic book discussion. So, number 18.
Speaking of comic books, 1998. I got a film here. One of my faves. Love the soundtrack. Love the blood. Love the gore. Love the action. And that's Blade. Wesley Snipes, Stephen Dorff, Kris Kristofferson. And
am I supposed to be impressed by the names you just threw out there?
Yes. I don't know. I really love like vampire lore and all the cool stuff that they put out there in this. They really do an awesome job at world building, and I think that it made me want to like be in some crazy clubs and experience some.
I was trying to figure out what you're going to say. It made me want to, be a vampire?
But yes, be a vampire. But yeah, no, I think that it spawned, you know, this trilogy. The others weren't as good, I would say, as the first one. But I think they had a super solid cornerstone here with the original Blade. Loved it. Wesley Snipes is such a badass in this. And he, like, can eat people, so...
I think he thinks he's that character in real life now.
I would too. I would just never come out of character.
He started the Marvel Universe, Kevin. You can't take that away from him.
Oh my. All right, Blade. I enjoyed Blade. I enjoyed Blade way more than I thought I would back in the day. I think I even enjoyed Blade 2. I don't remember anything about the other ones after that, though.
Blade Trinity had Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, don't remember seeing
and
that one.
Triple H.
Definitely not a vote in its favor. All right,
Whoa. The cerebral assassin?
It's one of the watching him running is worth it. Just there's a scene of him running, and I just
It's like Tom
man.
Cruise.
It's like if Tom Cruise was in a sumo suit and started. So, yeah.
For my number 18, I'm going to go ahead and do a back-to-back Spielberg pick. So, Spielberg at my number 19, Spielberg at my number 18. I went from Jurassic Park, and I'm going to go maybe a little less fun here with Saving Private Ryan for my number 18 from 1998. I think it's at everybody's. It's I don't know if it tops everybody's list, but it definitely is in most people's like top two or three like war films of all time, I think. Like it's just universally accepted that this movie is the end all be all when it comes to that type of a war movie. And it's not something that you're gonna watch a lot, I guess, but it definitely has an impact when you do watch it. So I think it's great. I think it should be required viewing by most people.
This movie was probably one of the first movies that I saw that I said to myself, this is too real. Like, it bothered me a lot. Like, especially coming from a family who have a lot of, service members and, a dad who's active in the military and cousins who are getting, taking shrapnel on the regular. And it's a very scary thing when it's that close to home to see the type of stuff that soldiers go through and have gone through, and this is so real, and it breaks you down in a lot of ways and shows you stuff that I guess the it's just soldiers shouldn't have to shoulder that. I think that us seeing that made it more real, made war more real.
Yeah, it's definitely not pulling any punches and trying to sugarcoat anything. Matt or Dan, any thoughts on Saving Private Ryan?
I mean, pretty obviously, the opening sequence is legitimately, I think, redefine what you can do with a World War II film. And I mean, I think it's, if I was ranking Steven Spielberg's best film, it's certainly up there. For me, I guess one way reason I wanted to put in like my favorite list because it's not like a movie I think I quote unquote enjoy watching, but certainly am always impressed by.
All right, that means Dan, it's your turn for your number 18.
Well, my number 18 is one I do enjoy watching. I've had a few silent films on my list, and my number 18 is really the first silent film I think I've really watched and enjoyed, and it's Buster Keaton's The General. And it's really a simple story that really just involves a guy on a train and the crazy mishaps and that occur because of it taking place during the Civil War, which you realize it's like a lot different when the civil like when people were still alive that witnessed the Civil War when this movie was made, which is kind of weird. But it just opened my eyes to just like how amazing Buster Keaton is as a director and physical comic and the stunts, and I was just blown away with how much this stood up the test of time. You know, it's 90 years old, and the special effects obviously are just impressive because you have that wonder of like how exactly did they do that? Because there's no computer animation or anything of that nature. You're just like, how did they accomplish a lot of those insane stunts? And the answer often is they did them to the point where Buster Keaton, he was like the original Jackass, if you will. But I think if you're a person who's hesitant to watch silent films because it's of how old they are, The General's actually a good one to go into because it's like I said, it's just like chock full of really great physical humor that I feel like is very universal and still can be appreciated today.
Excellent. All right, so those are all our number 18 picks. That means we're back to Matt for number 17.
All right. For my number 17, like I want to say it's like my highest Disney movie, but it's not. It's really weird because I think I went like 30 picks without a Disney, because I haven't seen that many. And again, this is a pretty recent one, but for my number 17, I got Inside Out. I don't know that there's very few movies that affect me in my soul like this movie did. Like just sitting in the theater, like watching it, it has such a different meaning as an adult than it probably would have if I were a child. It's both, I don't know, heartwarming and soul crushing at the same time. I just loved this movie when I saw it, and it'll that one viewing will always stick with me for forever. And it'll be something I go back to even if I ever see the movie again. Because it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people were singing a lot of praises for Inside Out, and the emotional impact that it had and what it was able to pull off, and something that almost didn't seem like it should be as effective as it was, because you're right, it's doing two completely different things, or can have a completely different effect on you depending on your age, depending on your mood or your mindset when you're watching it and what you're trying to draw out of it. I had a somewhat negative reaction to it right away, but I think it grew on me a little bit more as time went on. Amanda, what do you think of Inside Out?
I think that I definitely need to rewatch this. I wasn't like freaking out about it like everybody else was. It was a good movie. But as far as like impact on me, there's other Disney movies that I feel did more for me. I don't know if that's just 'cause the age that I experienced them at for the first time or what. I mean, not to take away anything from this. It was a great film for, a lot of ages, but I could definitely use a rewatch.
Dan, what do you think about Inside Out?
I think it's great. I think it revitalized. I think Pixar was like, they weren't the Pixar of old, and then Inside Out came and like reminded us of their genius once again. So I think it is pretty remarkable, and really smart and intelligent film, and in how it really approaches emotion and the way adults and kids deal with serious issues. And I think it's like Pixar was able to really, I mean, use legitimate psychology and place it within the framework of a kid's film, which is pretty impressive.
Definitely agree with that. Amanda, what do you have at your next pick?
I'm staying in 1998, and I know I'm probably gonna get some hate for this, all right, but I don't care. It's A Night at the Roxbury. Will Ferrell, Chris Kattan, trying to get into their favorite club. He's just shaking his head
Have no words for this.
Dude, 1990 hate.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I smell the hate.
So, Night at the Roxbury for you is better than what you put last week, Wayne's World and Bill and Ted.
Yes, I have so much fun with this. I love the 90s. You know this. 90s dance music, all about it, okay? And I actually made a Roxbury Club in my garage, and me and my cousin did. We had a disco ball, we had the flashing lights, we had everything, okay? And we made a list. And my cousin Jojo, that lived a few houses down from me, tried to get into our dance club, but he wasn't on the fucking list, so he couldn't get in. Two names on that list, me and my cousin, okay? My cousin Ashley. Jojo, not on the list. His big brother had to come down there and yell at us for us to let him in our nightclub. But we even did all the dance moves. We perfected everything, except for the ass grabbing. And I love the comedy here. I love how off the wall and stupid they are. But their camaraderie is super cute and a lot of fun.
You may be the biggest Night at the Roxbury fan on the planet.
I brazier I
You might
am.
be the president of the fan club.
Me and Ashley got matching outfits for one New Year's Eve out so we could be Steve and Doug Butabi.
I am amazed at the dedication, the follow through with the passion. I like it.
Yep.
Matt or Dan, any thoughts on Night at the Roxbury?
I honestly forgot that movie existed.
Oh my God.
I love SNL skits, but I don't know that I've ever enjoyed one turned into a movie.
You didn't like The Ladies' Man either?
Oh,
I
God.
also don't know that I've seen about as many as I've seen Disney movies.
Oh, I love the SNL skit. I love when Jim Carrey came and got involved in it too. A lot of fun. Yeah.
All right.
All
I
right.
didn't, yeah, man, I would have never been able to predict that Night at the Roxbury
I know
was
every
going to
single
make an
line to this
appearance.
movie. I can recite this entire movie.
All right, please don't.
I will.
All right, for my number 17, I'm going to go completely different direction. Going to go into the 80s For a James Cameron joint, whatever one you want to go with. This is, like we said, we only usually are picking one per franchise for most of these. So this is my Alien pick. Specifically Aliens, I guess, if I have to choose. But it could be Alien, it could be Aliens. They're both pretty close to each other. So I have Aliens at number 17. I think it's a fun horror slash sci-fi thriller suspense franchise. I think it's gone a lot of different directions. Not all of them have always been good, but those first two definitely set the bar and set the table and are why we've had so many other films, because they can keep going back to that magic and pulling some nostalgia out of it every time. So I think James Cameron was perfect with Aliens in 1986. It currently has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's the highest one of the ones I've talked about today. I just did that so Amanda could roll her eyes at me. Anybody else thoughts on the Alien franchise?
I'll save them for later, for me. So.
I like the second one better because I feel like Ripley gets more badass. In the first one, she's kind of like a victim of circumstance, but in the second one, she's like taking charge. Like, I'm going to fuck these aliens up. You done it now.
Amanda's riled up. All right, Dan, what's your number 17?
So for my number 17, I'm a huge fan of one day, like movies that take place in one day, especially if that one day primarily takes place in one location. And I don't think there's a movie that does that better than 12 Angry Men. It's similar to The General, which opened my eyes to silent film. I think 12 Angry Men really like allowed me to really get into more classic films that, you know, I watched a lot growing up with my parents, like more of the big studio films, but the on the drama end, I hadn't seen a lot. And, you know, I just thought it would be kind of hokey and things of that nature. But, you know, I think 12 Angry Men is really holds the test of time. I think its message is still pretty relevant today. And it's just a lot of great acting from really phenomenal performances by some of the best actors of all time. So it's, you know, it's – and even though it's primarily in one location, the director, Sidney Lumet, makes it very somatic as well. Yeah. So it's – right.
Absolutely. That film actually currently has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So a lot of respect for 12 Angry Men out there. That means we have one more pick on this side of the, I guess, the halfway mark of today's episode. So let's get through everybody's 16 before we take a quick break. So Matt, starting with you, what's your number 16?
My number 16, Wes Anderson, Grand Budapest Hotel. This movie... like, I probably the best movie. I got a higher one. Second best movie of 2014. Like, it was amazing. I love it. I love his works, but I think this is the highest of all of them. Like, they're just amazing. He like speaks to me in a way most directors don't. Probably should have picked him instead of Kevin Smith, although Kevin Smith's higher on my list. I don't know. I've got a weird energy today, guys. I'm sorry if that's weird. Grand Budapest Hotel is amazing. And what makes it even greater is that we saw it, and then my birthday, which I don't know, was like a month or two after release, Amy got me a painting and wrapped it up just like the painting in the movie, and also got me like a special pin that they did for one of the showings, like an actual showing over in Hollywood or something. Like, she spent a bunch of money on eBay. It's great. It's really cool. And I love this movie.
Yeah, I didn't even think about putting Wes Anderson up for the director retrospective. That would have been an interesting choice, because there is a few blind spots I still have, even though I've loved most of his more recent stuff. I still haven't seen a few of his originals. Nice. I like that. Grand Budapest Hotel. Dan, what do you think about that one?
Oh, I love that movie, and I can honestly see that creeping its way into my top 100. The soundtrack is phenomenal. It's just... Ray Fiennes' performance in that is just great. I think it's really underrated. I think I don't know if you remember he got nominated, but I remember him, he's really deserving too. So, yeah, I love Grand Budapest Hotel.
All right. Amanda, you're up next.
I'm going to stay kind of close to where I was at. We're going to be in 1994 for this one, though, guys. Moving up. And that's Interview with a Vampire.
There's a theme.
Yes, and you'll see that. There's also another Wesley Snipes movie coming up here. But Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Antonio Banderas, Kirsten Dunst. What do I got to say about this
movie? I like
that
you thought the theme I was talking about was Wesley Snipes.
Vampires and stuff. I was tying it back in to Blade.
I, I was gonna say, is he in that? I haven't seen it. Anything's possible.
It's vampires.
You're like, I got more Wesley Snipes. I'm like, I'm talking about vampire movies.
Oh, the creatures will keep coming. Yeah, but I mean, such a powerful movie and so cool and fun. I wish I would have been like older when I saw this and been able to appreciate like the 90s or the like pop culture stuff that was going on at the time. I think that after seeing the movie and reading the book, I have like a more of an appreciation for what I'm seeing in the movie and taking it all in. And I think that there's so much iconic stuff in this too. I mean, who doesn't know of Interview with the Vampire? Who? Tell me.
I haven't seen it.
You've never seen it?
No.
Kevin,
I don't watch vampire movies.
I'm putting this on immediately after this.
We say that every time, and we never
No,
put any
no,
of those
no,
films
no.
on.
It's coming out.
Matt or Dan, any thoughts on Interview with the Vampire?
I've
Heard
not
of
seen it
it.
either.
What?
Sorry, you got a silent panel on this one.
Whoa, neither of you, nobody on here has seen Interview with the Vampire?
Nope.
It looks scary.
What? It's not scary. It's
I
more like
don't
a
know.
drama. He's just like a lonely ass dude that got turned into a vampire.
He's one of those Nosferatu types too,
We
isn't he? Like really
rely
creepy.
on you to bring the knowledge about the
He
vampire
looks
movies.
like a real freaking dude, okay? He's not like a scary monster looking guy. They don't like morph. And I guess Tom Cruise gets a little crusty at one point, but it's more of it's not so much like just them eating people. It's like his life and relationships and love and being who he is and his detachment.
All right. So it's pretty depressing,
It's
huh?
a beautiful, sad, bloody story.
All right. Interview with the Vampire. I'll add it to the queue. For my number 16, I guess
He's
Dan.
lying.
I am. I guess Dan and I are just slightly different, I guess, on our favorite Bill Murray comedies, because I'm going to have one here at my number 16. I do love Groundhog Day, but I've always had just a tiny bit more affinity for What About Bob? So, What About Bob from 1991 is my number 16 pick from Frank Oz. I just absolutely, this is the movie that made me fall in love with Bill Murray before I even really knew who he was, and I've loved him ever since, and I can watch this movie. Man, I know that they hated each other. Both on set and ever since, but the dynamic that Bill Murray has with my mind's going blank right now. The old doctor guy, who was the actor that plays him?
Robert Dreyfuss?
Yes, Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, the dynamic that those two have, and I know it's probably a little bit easier since they really did. He was trying to annoy the crap out of him, and there's so much improv that Bill Murray is doing in this. Like they wanted him to be annoying, but he like took it and ran with it and was just like going off script and doing things in to Richard Dreyfuss that probably shouldn't have been done. But I think it worked for the film, and I absolutely love. What about Bob? Amanda, you were already quoting one of the scenes.
I'm sailing.
So
This
you're.
was already on my list. Super love this movie. Really fun. Definitely a cute side of Bill Murray and Bill Murray's humor. He was not as mean-spirited as he can be in this movie, so it was a nice light Bill Murray film.
All right. Dan, do you have this up there towards the top, or do you not like What About Bob nearly as much as some of the other ones that he's done?
I do like it. I don't think I just have not seen it nearly that much. I've only maybe seen it once or twice, so it's not a dislike. It's just lack of exposure.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with either of the films we've mentioned that are in Bill Murray's catalog from the, 80s, early 90s. But a lot of fun stuff there. Dan, last pick here before we take a break. What's at your number 16?
Well, I talked about really enjoying movies that take place in one day, and I have another one back to back, and I did not really plan that at all. That's kind of weird. But for my number 16, I have Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. And this is a movie I actually watched in response to a class I had in college. It was class, I don't even remember what it was regarding, but we talked a lot about social issues, and this is a movie that was brought up a lot, and I kind of watched it, and it was this revelation. And, up to that point, I think the only Spike Lee movie I watched was maybe Inside Man or something of that nature. But just the style is all over this. It's very, I don't know, I don't like, of the time, 80s, 90s. It's, you know, coming out in 1989, but a movie that has a lot of comedy, but has a lot to say as well. And I think it's a really great representation of, you know, of a specific time and place. But also, I think it's one that somehow it becomes more relevant as times go on, and one that I know has impacted a lot of directors. I was recently watching like Kevin Smith talk about how a lot of what he did with Clerks was based upon his enjoyment of Do the Right Thing, which you don't necessarily connect those dots, but I think there's certainly, if you kind of look at, you know, just the general approach is certainly there, especially the original ending of Clerks before they changed it. So, but yeah, I'm not a huge Spike Lee fan, and I don't like a lot of his filmography, but Do the Right Thing has always been a movie from him that's impressed me.
That's a blind spot for me as well. I'll have to add yet another film to my list of films to watch from this countdown experience. So, all right, Do the Right Thing, last pick on this side of the break. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our numbers 15 through 11.
After these messages,
we'll be right back.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk.
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Hi, this is Greg.
This is Chuck.
And this is Dan. And we are Talking in Circles.
Because the world needs another podcast, we are here as Geekcast Radio's newest edition.
And as the title says, each week we get lost in conversation about a wide range of topics, including movies, comics, games, art, TV, and even occasionally sports.
We play games and discuss pivotal topics like who would win in a fight, the Kool-Aid Man or Tony the Tiger, and examine the hot-button issues of the world of geekdom.
We keep things fresh by taking timeless topics in new directions.
We are simply three friends having a fun time talking about life's most fascinating foibles.
Stay connected with us every Tuesday on iTunes or at geekcastradio.com.
Now back to the show. Do you see how your patience paid off?
All right, thanks for sticking with us. As we said before the break, we're going to continue on with our numbers 15 through 11. Just a little quick update as far as the crossover picks. So far, with half of the picks of the top 30 revealed, we have only two films that have made it onto two people's lists. So Dan and Amanda both had Aladdin. Amanda and I each had Jurassic Park. So not looking super favorable for the four list crossovers so far. Matt, what are you going to start off with for number 15?
One that definitely has to be on everyone's list, right, guys? Because this is a movie that really got me through my teenage years. I want to say I watched it and then like immediately had to watch it again, like within a day or two. And that's Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail. Like, this movie is hilarious. It's timeless. I could watch it again and again. I quoted it all throughout my high school years and still do to this day. Like, if you haven't seen it, you're missing out.
I'm missing out.
You are missing out. Like, we're the same age. There's no reason you shouldn't have seen this.
They just looked stupid. So.
Yo, Dirty Dancing!
Not in the same way.
So you just didn't like the aesthetic look of it?
It just looked like, and I watch B-rated movies, it just looked like something I wouldn't be able to concentrate on.
Alright, but you haven't seen it?
No, I've just seen like pieces of it, or like pieces of like this commercial trying to get you to buy them.
Let's call it an infomercial.
Way back in the day. Yeah, whatever those were called.
Dan, what do you think about the Holy Grail?
Choose wisely, I guess. I love Monty Python and Holy Grail. It almost made my top 100. It was in it during a few iterations of it. I always go back and forth which one I like more, that or Life of Brian. But yeah, I enjoyed both of Monty Python a great deal. So
I don't know. I don't know if I've been vocal before on different podcasts or whatnot, but I am not a fan of Monty Python in any way, shape, or form. So,
what?
Yeah, I just have never been able to get into any of their films. So maybe I need. It might be time for me to give them another shot, though, because that's based off of me when I was much younger and dumb. So maybe I've matured into a place that I can appreciate that. I'm not a big fan of British humor in general, which I think, you know, would hinge your appreciation of that film based on that type of humor and if you like it or not. So, but I should give it another shot. So, all right, Amanda, what's your number 15?
So, if you guys didn't appreciate my last pick, I'm definitely not going to get any love for this one. it's 1993's Demolition Man.
Oh my God.
Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes, Sandra Bullock. I love the premise here, I love the execution. I think there's the right amount of humor with the right amount of action. Kevin is about to take his headphones off. He's done with this. Stop it. I like
even in your 90s love. I understand you love 90s and I understand you love the genre, but even within that, if we take that, you have Demolition Man more than almost 15 spots higher than Independence Day.
Yes, and that's because the amount of fun that I had when I was watching this movie. You know, my grandma would be chilling out. I'd be eating some freaking Cheetos or some Pringles or whatever, grilled cheese. I don't know, okay? It's Sunday afternoon, watching this with my grandma on TNT over and over again. And we had a lot of fun with it. And it brings back good memories. It's like a feeling of home and contentment. And it's like a comfort movie, as weird as that is. But I also super enjoy what's going on in the film.
Fair enough. I like that. I'll buy that to be on your personal list. Connection, what about, memories.
What about them seashells, though?
Yeah, nobody knows.
What about them seashells, though?
He doesn't know how to use the three seashells.
We did watch this recently, didn't we?
Yeah, it was like on all HBO right. Or something.
All right, for my number 15 pick, I will pick a film that is going to equally make Amanda want to leave the record and take her headphones off and go somewhere else because she is so anti this film, and I still to this day don't know why. But I'm going to go to 1985 for what I think is probably the best coming-of-age film of all time, and that would be The Breakfast Club at number 15. Amanda? No thoughts from her? Okay. But, you know, I love this film. It's my favorite one out of the John Hughes films. I think it's got a little bit of something for everybody. I love the music in it. And I just, I don't know, maybe I watched it at the... we watched this in psychology or sociology or psychology class in high school and had to do a paper on it. But, yeah, I like what they did with this one. I like the coming-of-age aspect, and I think it was done to perfection in Breakfast Club.
Are they literally just in... the one room the whole time. I'm pretty sure I've asked this before, but I don't remember.
Are they in one room the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, yes. But I mean, not 100% no. But basically, yes.
They're just like sitting at these desks the whole time?
No.
What?
You have to watch it.
No.
Why are you so against The Breakfast Club?
It's so lame looking.
Give it a shot. I will watch all those movies that you just mentioned in your last... that I hadn't seen. I will watch Footloose and Dirty Dancing if you watch Breakfast Club.
I don't know if there's negotiation here. Like, you're just going to come home and it's going to be on and you're going to have to watch it.
Dan or Matt, any thoughts on Breakfast Club?
It's amazing.
Help
it's
me
great.
Out. Help me out here.
No, it's real good, and I believe it holds up really well, honestly. Like, a lot of 80s movies do not hold up well. Like, there's nothing in Mystic Pizza worth watching, but, like, the Breakfast Club 100% legit stands up.
I love that you just pulled a Mystic Pizza reference. Dan, should she watch Breakfast Club?
I think so, because I think it's one of those movies that I often gets referenced in a lot of movies as well. I think it's a cultural icon in that way, and... I mean, it is, like, I could see it not aging well for a new generation because it's a movie that is very 80s in all of its glory and does some things that may not hold up completely well, but I think it also, it's John Hughes in his formula, I think, has been replicated but never, you know, duplicated in such a manner. But yeah, it's certainly worth watching. I mean, it was Pitch Perfect or something like that. I think references that movie like hard. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's worth watching.
It's worth watching. That's three people telling you to watch it. All right, Dan, don't give her a chance to respond. What's your number 15?
I'm going to return to the world of the Westerns, but a very different type of Western and more of a spaghetti Western. I know a lot of people love, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and rightfully so. But my favorite Sergio Leone movie is Once Upon a Time in the West. I, you know, think it's, you know, when people say what's the best Western, it's always the one I go to. It's just this masterpiece of just of movie making. It, from the opening, it just, and it just has, it just, the way it's put together, the score, it's everything that I feel like spaghetti Westerns are known for, but I think it's just a better made film than some of the other, like, earlier spaghetti Westerns.
What's a spaghetti Western? Is that like a Western made by Italian people?
Yes, it's, that's part of it. Yeah, it's Italian influence. Especially, you know, often you would, a lot of it was actors were Italian and they were later dubbed over. A lot of that style comes into, you know, the impact of the film, because there's like, you have like John Ford type of Westerns, and then you have something like a Sergio Leone, where it's a little bit more drawn out, a little bit more, I want to say, not as friendly to the general audiences per se, because it's just the pacing of it and things of that nature, heavy on theme, like the use of music is a key element to them all. I don't know exactly what would qualify one and not the other, but I think once you've seen one, you kind of know what they entail. So, but Henry Fonda to me is one person that makes this, weirdly, he's also in 12 Angry Men, but seeing him as a villain and knowing that he was an actor that was never really in a role like that, and seeing him being this ruthless killer was quite astounding. So yeah, it's a movie I would watch more if it wasn't like 3 hours long, but it's, when I do, it's quite the journey.
I think it would be great. This is just coming to me as you're naming all these, you know, classic and well revered Westerns. Like, we need to have like a Western series of some sort, or maybe I just need to go on like a binge of Western films, because there's way too many that I haven't seen, and there's even more that I have only seen once or twice, like when I was really younger. And I'd be very curious to watch a bunch of these back to back and actually kind of compare them and kind of see some of the progression of the Western as a genre through the different decades. It'd be a fun journey. Might have to think about that for some time. But yeah, great pick there. Matt, let's see what you have at number 14.
All right. My number 14 is an American classic, The Man of Bronze, Doc Savage. This is the man who's the best at everything in the world. Like, he's the greatest lawyer, the greatest inventor, the greatest pugilist. He knows so many different styles of martial arts. But he keeps the second best of everything around him, because he can only do one thing at a time. So he also has, you know, like a chemist and a sniper and all these other weird guys. It is just an off-the-wall movie about the best guy in the world. He's just the best guy. Like, it opens up, he's in Antarctica at the Fortress of Solitude, which I think he invented and Superman stole, you know, if you go back to the pulp stories. And he's like, he fishes with like an Estes rocket. Like, he, like, a fish grabs his line, he hits a button, and it shoots the rocket in the air, and that gets him his fish out of the water, which is pretty amazing. And then he gets a signal in his head. He, like, has a bad feeling about what's happening, so he's got to go fly back to New York real quick. And then, like, that's how his adventure starts. It's insane. Like, I can't recommend this movie enough.
Dan, have you seen Doc Savage?
No, is it based on the actual comic? I've read some of Doc Savage comics, but I've never seen
it. Well, it started off as like serialized pulp stories, and then got turned into like a book, and then a movie, and then came to the comic world. Okay. It was insane. As the entire music of this movie, the score is Sousa songs, but with lyrics added. Like, at one point, literally, like, they sing, "His father is dead." And then it's like, what is it? "But Doc seems to carry on." Like, it's insane. This movie is so great. Like, I can't recommend it enough.
All right. Might have to check this one out. I don't think I've seen this one either. Amanda, have you seen Doc Savage?
No.
All right. That's over. So we can't comment too much on it, but we might have to add it to the list of things to watch, which is now, I think, at, like, 363.
What year did that come out? Any idea?
Oh, my guess would be the 70s, but that's just a guess.
All right. Amanda, 14.
You guys are really friggin' depressing me when it comes to my list today. But you better not let me down here, all right? My number 14, 1985, Michael J. Fox, Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Love his story. Love his transformation. Michael J. Fox is just doing his thing here, and I think that it was a super fun, slightly scary because he's a freaking werewolf story that like encompassed teen angst and finding yourself and coming to terms with who you are and family and friends and crushes and all that good stuff and van surfing.
You threw me off with the 1985 Michael J. Fox intro.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely going to.
I'm like, I'm on board 100%. And then he said Teen Wolf.
Which I haven't seen, so I can't say anything bad.
I think I've seen Teen Wolf, but I don't remember a lot about it.
You guys.
Sorry. I will have to watch it. I've actually heard good. I heard it's a fun film. In all honesty, but I've never seen it.
Matt, have you seen Teen Wolf?
You know, I think I've seen bits of it, and here's the three things that I associate with Teen Wolf. One is riding on top of a car, which she said van surfing, so I guess that's what happens. Two is a werewolf slam dunking, I think happens. And then three, like, isn't there, like, wolf dong in this movie?
No.
Are you sure? There might be donger in this one. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not a full wolf dong in this, no. There's no nudity.
Hmm.
The conversations I didn't expect to have today.
I mean, that does tend to happen in werewolf movies, but this is a little more on the PG side.
All right. I think we're going to move on to the next pick before we go any further down that rabbit hole. For my number 14 pick, it's actually already been mentioned in this episode, I am going to be 100% on the same page as Dan with my pick of 12 Angry Men at number 14. This was probably one of the first classic films that I guess quote unquote classic films that I saw growing up, and I absolutely loved it. I am with Dan. I love films that are in a single room or a single setting. I love films that have a very limited cast of characters and that just completely focus on the actual dialogue, the decisions, the motivations of those said characters and kind of their reactions and what kind of informs all that type of stuff. And I think it's just an amazing journey that you go through from, you know, the beginning of that film and the beginning of the deliberation to the end. I think there's so much that you can take away from it. So I apologize, Dan, for not talking too much about it when you brought it up, but I could watch this film over and over again. I think it's easily one of the best films from the 50s. So, 12 Angry Men for me. Dan, what's your number 14?
I'm going to go from the 50s to the 60s and talk about, I mentioned I'd be bringing up another Paul Newman movie, and I'm going to do that here with 1967's Cool Hand Luke. And it's probably the movie I think that made me into a Paul Newman fan. It's just really this like kind of meditation of this man that is just in rebellion against life. I think it's a movie that I think it's really, in a way, if you're just the way out the plot, seems kind of simplistic. It's just this guy that goes to jail and tries to figure things out, but underneath, it's a very great character study. But it's also really funny and entertaining. Some really classic moments from the infamous egg-eating contest to the sequence of them like plowing the road, and I don't know, it's, you know, we talk about great prison movies, it probably for me is the best of all time, and I think it all kind of centers on just the power of Paul Newman as an actor. You know, people talk about Rebels Without a Cause, and they tend to think of James Dean. But to me, that's always Quinn Luke, because it's just the epitome of a guy who's just trying to figure things out. Doesn't really know how to do that. So, yeah, so that's it for me.
All right, Cool Hand Luke for Dan at number 14. Moving right along to Matt's number 13 pick. What do you got, Matt?
All right. For my number 13, this is by far the highest Disney movie. And, again, probably a product of his time, because I don't think it's the best anymore. But that is Frozen. Like, it's great because it's got all those Disney things that you love, but it's also like a fantasy story about like wizards and shit. It's great. I love it. It's fun. I don't get all the hate that it gets online.
Or from Amanda.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
She wasn't. You weren't super high on Frozen, were you?
No, I mean, it's not like it wasn't like life changing. Like everybody was freaking out like it was, but.
I wouldn't say it's life-changing.
Little girls freaked out about this movie. Like,
little girls freak out about princesses. They're princesses.
Still losing their shit over this movie.
I think some of that was because of what they were able to do in recapturing something that Disney had seemingly lost over the decades. You could go to Tangled, you could go to Princess and the Frog, you can go to Frozen, but I think Frozen was kind of the culmination of them putting all the pieces back together to give us something on par with what we got kind of in the quote-unquote Disney renaissance of Lion King, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast. I think this is the closest they came to kind of going back to that type of magic, and I think there is something to be said about the some unique aspects of it compared to maybe the typical princess story that we got. So,
you mean besides Merida, who just chooses not to have a prince?
I ignore that film.
Are you serious? Why? Did you watch it?
I was not a big fan of Brave.
Did you watch it?
Yes. In theater.
Brave, I think, got almost everything right. Like, I love the characters. I love the art design. I love, like, the story. But ultimately, it's just the most played out hero's journey. Like, they just flubbed it on the writing. Like, everything about that movie should have been the best movie, like, the best anime movie ever. And it missed something. It, like, lacked originality in some way. It looked so beautiful. It's almost as bad as, what was it, 9? Like another just a brilliant, beautiful movie that has a terrible, boring story.
Dan, thoughts on the hashing out of another Disney princess battle here?
Well, I do like Frozen a good deal. I actually saw that with my niece, who was one of those people that it did change her life, but she was also three at the time, and it was the first movie she ever saw. So that's a big part of it.
Right.
But I also think, yeah, it recaptures that Disney magic, but also I think it circumvents a lot of the classic Disney tropes, and that I think people kind of overlook just the way it's set, which I think maybe is why I get some of that hate, because I think people misread a lot of what it's doing and, you know, and how it's really commenting on just the setups that you would typically get with a Disney film, and how characters would automatically fall in love, and there would be the story, and how they would kind of, they set the formula, but really found some new ways to go about it. Although I think I find Moana actually a better movie than all of those. This is speaking of someone who has a 2-year-old and has watched Moana more so than any adult should. So, but still think it's a pretty good film. So.
Go ahead. I agree with that I think Moana is better, and that was what I was referencing when I said I don't think it's the best anymore, is I think Moana might be the best.
So we have multiple things that we could do. We could do a Western series, we could do a Disney series to make Matt watch all the rest of the Disney films and just reignite these arguments over and over and over again. It would be quite the blast, I'm sure, for the listeners. Amanda, did you do what you could have done here with back-to-back 1985 Michael J. Fox films, or what do you have at number 13?
Nope, I'm definitely going to get some hate for this.
every movie you talk about, you give it a preface.
Well, the problem was I was like really excited about this.
And no, then
the farther that we're gone through in my list, the more I feel like I'm just going to go on an island and take all my fucking 90s VHSs and a TV and just chill by myself forever. that's how it's going to go. But my number 13 is from 1992. And I just wanted to pick one movie from this series, or from this franchise, or whatever we're going to call this, this property, all right? And this is Batman Returns. I was waiting for anything.
Is that the one with the Penguin?
Yes. Catwoman, Penguin, Michael Keaton, Batman. I think it's... I mean, clearly a Tim Burton movie. It's got him all over it. But I thought it was a super well done, I'll say it, comic book movie. It definitely felt like a comic book. And it was the dark plus the mild humor plus the inappropriate nature at some points. The look, the costuming, the characters, the story. I think that this is probably my favorite. It is my favorite Batman rendition.
Dan?
I think actually a lot of my childhood Batman Returns was my favorite Batman movie too. And I don't know why. I think a big part of it was because they had the Batboat and I liked the Batboat. I was a simple child. I liked simple things. But I went back and rewatched that, I don't know, a few years ago. And it's just, it's like, I'm surprised Tim Burton got away with so much he got away with, because that's a dark movie. Like the portrayal of the Penguin in that is super freaky. Like, Danny DeVito is great, but it's just like eating disgusting, and like, you know, you can definitely tell the studio's like, you know what, Batman made like $1 trillion, so do whatever you want, and he got away with a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think we rewatched at least part of this within the last couple of years, and I was surprised because I didn't remember the dark elements of it as much. I just kind of remembered the more comic book things that Amanda was talking about, but it does have some layers there of different feels going on there. Matt, what do you think about Batman Returns?
Oh man, I remember weird snippets of it. Like, I remember, like, penguins with rockets strapped to them, and I remember Catwoman getting shot a bunch of times at the end. But, like, it doesn't stick with me. I don't think any of the serious Batman movies stick with me nearly as much as the silly ones. Like, I will take Mr. Freeze puns and anything the 1960s Batman is doing over any of the serious Batman stuff any day.
So I think there is a lot of different people that find a lot of different, have different favorites for their Batman likes and what kind of style they like the movies to go to. So it's always interesting to hear different takes on those. For my number 13, I'm going to a franchise pick as well. So you have your Batman franchise. I'm going to go to an 80s franchise for the most part, although it bled over into some other decades. And if I have to pick a specific film, I'll pick Raiders of the Lost Ark to represent Indiana Jones at my number 13 pick. And this would be the third Steven Spielberg pick for the day. That'll be the last one for today as well. But Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, I mean, come on. There was two franchises that made me fall in love with film, and this is one of them. So it's a... I'm surprised it's not higher, but there were some other films that kind of eked out over it. So Indiana Jones, 13. Raiders of the Lost Ark, I guess, if I have to pick one. But I've always had a thing for The Last Crusade, just for the record. That was my favorite for a long time. Anybody thoughts on Indiana Jones or silence?
I will hold my Indiana Jones talk for the next episode.
All right, fair enough. That means, Dan, you're up for number 13.
So 2 years ago, Jason Bourne was my most anticipated movie of the year, and that's because I really love the entire franchise. Maybe not Jason Bourne as much, but the Bourne supremacy, Bourne identity, but ultimately my favorite of all of them is the Bourne Ultimatum. It's my number 13. One of the best, I think, theater experiences I've ever had was watching this, and, you know, edge on your seat can be cliche, but it was legitimately true. I remember the rooftop chase sequence, and just... I remember watching that and just being so hyped up to watch it again because of how exciting it all was. And there was something about this franchise that always really clinged with me. Like, I love the action style, the physicality of it, the stunts, the choreography, the character of Jason Bourne. And I feel like it all, like, every movie got better. And, like, Bourne Ultimatum to me was the ultimate send-off. Like, I was sad the franchise ended, but I was like, I'm happy because it's ending on a high note, and I kind of do wish it ended here. I don't think the other films are awful. They just aren't to the level of The Bourne Ultimatum, which I think is just, for me, probably the best action movie of the 2000s as of right now.
Yeah, I love the Bourne films as well. Like, I think they did have some missteps there at the end, but I think those, the ones that you're talking about, for sure were the cream of the crop, and I think they would definitely be in the conversation for best action film of the 2000s as well. There's only maybe two or three others that would be in that conversation, I think, but it'd be that'd be an interesting debate that we could get into at some point. Matt, there's only time for two picks left, so for today, what's your number 12?
I mean, I guess I'm going to do just a run of kids movies because my number 12 is Bridge to Terabithia. Dude, I love, like, I freaking love magic, guys. That's what this is. Is like, if you got a good magic storyline and, like, for some reason it's really endearing, and then there's, like, a friggin' heart-wrenching moment, like, right there in the middle towards the end, like, right before the final act, then I guess it wins, and I put it on my list, because that's what this is. This movie, I watched, I don't know, I was, like, 19, which is a really old age to be bawling my eyes out to it, but that's what I was, and that's what happened.
Amanda?
I've never seen it.
This, I feel like this should be on your list. This is, like, right up your alley. You had, like, Indian in the Cupboard and other things that remind me of this.
Yeah, dude, I just saw Golden Compass, like, 2 years ago. I feel like that's the same kind of thing.
What year did Bridge to Terabithia come out? Anybody know that off the top of your head? No? All right. I'll have to get that.
I'd say 2006.
That sounds right.
Okay. I thought it was an older film than that for some reason, but I haven't seen it either, so I cannot comment.
Probably because I was off drinking at college and I wasn't watching Bridge to Terabithia movies.
I was close, 2007.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was definitely in college.
I mean, so was I.
I was barely awake for class and just drinking the night away. That was about it.
Jesus. All right. Amanda, you're number 12 then. What else were you enjoying in those days?
In 1991, I was enjoying Beauty and the Beast, the original animated version. Super love this. It's a magic story, too, Matt. Love the magic. I think that this was something that really opened my eyes to how grand a scale animated movies could be, and like how beautiful and like detailed they could be. And it was one that just the opening always got me so excited for the whole movie. Like, it was such a great level of excitement to have build in just this first small little scene before any of the, you know, actual movie like starts to take place, the new plot. So it was one that I was always super excited to watch and have contained this love and kept it all these years, and it hasn't been diminished by time. And the new version that came out was great. I wouldn't put it above the original animated, though.
And you slightly prefer Beauty and the Beast then over Aladdin based on today's episode?
Yes.
All right. Anybody else have thoughts on Beauty and the Beast?
It's great.
Fair enough. That means it's my turn for number 12. I guess I'll go with the boring pick here that would be on a lot of people's probably top 50, top 100 list if they had to make one. But I'll go with Godfather from 1972 from Francis Ford Coppola. Godfather 1, 2, whichever one you want to go with. But I'll go with the original Godfather here. I love mobster movies, and this is one of the best. Not the best, but one of the best. I slightly prefer another one to it, but I still think Godfather is classic enough and has enough iconic scenes and characters and moments that it definitely deserves to be mentioned. So it's my number 12. Dan, what do you got next?
For my number 12, so I've had a lot of movies in this list, like I talked about. I love movies that center on news for some reason. I don't know why. I talk radio, broadcast news. This is one that's specifically on journalism. One of my, you know, the movie that recently, Spotlight, that recently won Best Picture was referenced to this film, and I definitely see why, and that's what made me a big reason why I enjoyed Spotlight as much as I did, and that's All the President's Men, starring, again, Robert Redford, and who's showing up again in my list, along with Dustin Hoffman, and just the story of Watergate, and it's a really just procedural film that it's really no spills about it. It's kind of like rough around the edges in some ways, but that's really what's great about it. And it's just, it's documentary-esque, but not like in the sense of you get a lot of handheld cameras, but it just feels like you're watching it come to life. And when you think about it, this happened, this was made not that long after the events occurred. So I just think it had something special about this movie. And it's just really well written and just a phenomenal story and a movie that reflects that. And I think possibly also a very important film too, because I think it allowed people to kind of come to understanding exactly what exactly was going on to a greater extent. So it's not the last movie I'll talk about that centers on the news, but it's the last one for today at least.
Obviously, I agree. It was my number 92 when we started this list way back on episode 100. And I think you're right. You know, anybody that's a big fan of dialogue, writing, and just, you know, classic acting, I think you get all of that here. So a lot to love from All the President's Men, for sure, at least for me. That means it's only one pick remaining for each of us for today. That's our number 11 pick. So last one on this side, outside of the top 10, I guess you could say. Matt, what do you have at number 11?
All right. So I guess I cheated here, because in my 40 to 50, I put Star Trek Generations. So I guess I'm splitting up the original series and the Next Generation, and I'm putting for my number 11, The Wrath of Khan. Like, this movie is great. Like, it's like the perfect Star Trek movie. But really, why it's on my list is very personal, because this is essentially where me and my wife connected. We had met just 2 days before, and then a close mutual friend was like, invited her over to watch Wrath of Khan, and she was like, hey, you should invite that Matt guy, because she had dubious plans and stole my cell phone number then. Eventually, when the next Star Wars, the reboot came out, we both dressed up. And even bought fabric to try to make the Wrath of Khan coats, which are really intense.
Yeah, I think this is by far the best original series film that we got. And Wrath of Khan is one of the best villains, maybe. Something that we could consider for our top fictional villains list that's coming up later on this year. But I think Wrath of Khan's a great pick. Amanda, you haven't seen Wrath of Khan, have you?
I believe I have. Just
okay.
Done it a long ass time.
Gotcha. Dan, any thoughts on that, or are you still waiting to catch up for on the Star Trek films?
I've seen Wrath of Khan just once, though. I watched like all the first generation films once. Like, they were on HBO for a period of time, so I kind of went through them. And I think as someone who's not a huge Star Trek fan, I can recognize what's great about it, but I feel like if I had a bigger context of those characters, for me, I think not my favorite of that genre, but I think it's certainly one of the best of the films. I think Star Trek IV, I always enjoyed that a lot. It's kind of goofy, but maybe that's why I liked it. But certainly it's, you know, handled all that character is obviously handled a lot better in that film than, you know, Into Darkness. So.
All right, Amanda, last pick for today. What do you got?
1990s Pretty Woman. Richard Gere, Julia Roberts, love at first sight, love story. I just like this because it's like it takes the Cinderella story and it puts it in a real setting for Julia Roberts' character. She is just trying to get by. She is a girl in the world on her own, with her big personality and her zip-up thigh-high boots, and she's just trying to make it. And I think that this definitely plays into a lot of the female fantasy of being swept off their feet by the perfect guy. And it's a little rocky, but it smooths out, and they fall in love, and it's a charming, cute, but provocative film.
Hey, Pretty Woman. I'm not gonna say anything bad. I think it's a good film. Not in my top 100, but I do remember liking it. I haven't seen
actually it. Oddly enough, did an episode of M Wire with Mike on that, and it was the first time I think I watched it. I was like, wow, this is much better than I thought it would be. It's actually, you know, I could see why it made Julia Roberts into a megastar. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, for my last pick, I'm going to talk about a film, not a lot because it's already been brought up much earlier in the countdown by somebody. I don't remember who had it on their list already, but I'm pretty sure it came up. I'm going to go back to 1942 for a film that Amanda still needs to finish, and that would be Casablanca. I think probably, in my book, the greatest film from the 40s and maybe one of the best romantic films out there. Maybe not.
How many movies were coming out in the 40s? Best movie of the 40s.
Actually, like, a lot two more. They had 8,000. They had made films like a factory back then.
Yeah, there was a lot of films coming out in the 40s. Like, if you look at some of these people, like, look at our stars today and how many films they were in, and then you go back and look at, like, how many films, like, some of the classic Hollywood stars were in, it's ridiculous.
John Ford made like 800 movies. It's like insane.
Yeah. But I love Casablanca. I just love the characters. I think that's the big sell for me. Like you were talking about with All the President's Men, where for me, it's a little bit more about the writing and the dialogue. For me, for Casablanca, it's all about the characters and just really watching them chew up the scenery. And there's so many iconic lines and scenes, and I think it's just got some great twists and turns, and I don't know. I just love Casablanca. I loved it since the first time I saw it. It's probably one of the first DVDs I ever bought, actually, in one of those flimsy cases that like is just like a piece of cardboard on the one side and like snaps together. I think I still have that on the shelf. So Casablanca, my number 11. Amanda, you need to finish it.
I feel like I saw it because I saw Allied last year.
No, you didn't.
They were in Casablanca.
Yes, but you need to see Casablanca. We saw all of it except for like the last 20 minutes. Dan or Matt, one of you had this on your list, right?
I did number 80.
All right, so mutual love there for Casablanca. Dan, what's your last pick for today?
For my last pick, I'm going to actually go. We had some comic book films, and you know, I already had Dark Knight and Spider-Man 2 and some other comic book movies on my list, and the key to this is that this is, you know, it's your favorite films, not what I would argue are the best. And I'm a huge X-Men fan, and, you know, that kind of what started my whole interest into the geek world. And for my number 11, I'm going with my favorite X-Men film because it's one that I think speaks the most to me. For a very long time, X-Men 2 was my favorite, all-time favorite comic book movie. But most recently, that was dethroned a few years ago with X-Men First Class, which is my number 11. Just, I love this movie, and there's so much about it. Like, way back when I did a list of my favorite Marvel movie moments, and this had, like, I was trying not to overflood it with moments from this movie, from pretty much any scene that involved Michael Fassbender as Magneto, you know, the use of the coin motif from the beginning to the end. I love the relationship of Charles Xavier and Magneto in this, and one of the best moments is just the scene of Xavier helping Magneto to move this gigantic satellite. There's some problems with it here and there, but I felt like it gave me everything I was looking for. And after X-Men 3 being a huge letdown and thinking that now this franchise wasn't going anyplace, it really breathed new life and, you know, eventually led to X-Men Days of Future Past. But always will hold a special place in my heart. Plus, gets extra points for the Magneto theme, which is just probably the best piece of music for me in any Marvel movie. So,
yeah, I love this film too. I always go back and forth whether I like First Class or Days of the Future Past better, but I think they did a phenomenal job with what they did with the kind of rebooting the series with this newer cast / crossover performances and whatnot. So I'm on board 100%. I loved these two films. Amanda, what do you think of X-Men First Class amongst the other X-Men films?
Oh, man, it's definitely up there. I don't know how I would rank all of the X-Men films. I do have a lot of love for like the original X-Men movie that came out. And I think that this, the newer cast is still really great. And I think Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy's relationship throughout has been one of the best parts, and Magneto is such a friggin' badass here, and I love the tortured soul that he is, and the revenge tirade that he goes on, And I think that the scene that Dan's talking about when he's learning to, you know, control his power in a way other than using rage was a very powerful moment, definitely.
Matt, any other thoughts on X-Men First Class before we recap our numbers 20 through 11 picks?
I mean, I think I agree with you where I put that at number 2 and Days of Future Past is number 1, but I mean, this new batch is so much better than the old batch of movies. Like, they did a real good job.
All right, so why don't you go ahead and run down your numbers 20 through 11 for everybody.
All right, my 10 movies this time were Duel to the Death, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Avengers, Inside Out, Grand Budapest Hotel, Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail, Doc Savage, Frozen, The Bridge to Terabithia, and Wrath of Khan.
Amanda, how about your set of 10?
Dirty Dancing, Aladdin, Blade, A Night at the Roxbury, Interview with the Vampire, Demolition Man, Teen Wolf, Batman Returns, Beauty and the Beast, and Pretty Woman.
All right, mine were Pulp Fiction, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, Aliens, What About Bob, The Breakfast Club, 12 Angry Men, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Godfather, and Casablanca. Dan?
My number 20 was Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, then Groundhog Day, The General, 12 Angry Men, Do the Right Thing, Once Upon a Time in the West, number 14, Cool Hand Luke, then The Bourne Ultimatum, then All the President's Men, and lastly, X-Men First Class.
All right, so those are our 20 through 11 picks. We still have, obviously, the top 10. Amanda, question for you. Will there be a single film that appears on all four lists?
Oh, yikes. In the top 30, you mean?
And so far, yeah. So far, we have none. Will we get to one?
I don't think so. Looking at my own list...
That does not bode well for my six.
Maybe one.
Matt, what do you think? Will we get to one or two here now that we're finally to the top 10?
Do we have one movie in common from, what, 11 to 100? Like, does any one movie hit all four of our lists yet?
I'd have to do some database work there, but I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. Like... No, I don't see it happen. That's weird.
I thought for sure, because even when we were back making the predictions, like I had 5 to 7 films that I was sure everybody would have, but there's only 10 spots left, and a lot of them have not been mentioned or only mentioned once. Dan, what do you think? Are we looking at a losing cause here with our 5 and 6 predictions?
I think we're going to get, I think one perhaps, because there was one that was brought up today that I could see being repeated. At least 2 more times. I'm not sure about the third. So, yeah, I think if we get one, we'll be lucky.
I'm going to hold out hope that we still have 2. I think there might be the possibility for 2. But we're going to have to wait and see, and you guys will as well, as you wait for the final rendition of this over a year-long process. We started at episode 100, and I think we'll end this at episode 150. So it took 50 episodes to get through our top 100, but then everybody will have a good idea of the films that we like and all of our personal taste for film, and I think it's been a fun conversation along the way. So definitely let us know what you guys think of the list so far. Whose list do you most match up with as far as your personal movie taste? Go to the website, www.geekcastradio.com, find the episode post, and chime in and let us know, and we'll try to interact with you and start some conversations there. You can also interact with us on Twitter. The show handle is at CinemaGeekCast. Amanda, your Twitter is?
At HardCandyMandy. Eyes, no eyes.
Mine is at OptimusSolo. Dan, your Twitter handle is?
At MovieRevolt.
And Matt?
I'm at FridleySunt.
And don't forget, as soon as you're done listening, go to the website, find our episode 144 post, and vote. Help us decide what the next director that we talk about will be. Zemeckis, Kevin Smith, Gizmo, or Hitchcock? Tune in next week for another chance to listen to The Cinema Geeks.